This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is a once-a-year guest, David Shea, who is the director of the Office of Charge Card Management at the Federal Acquisition Service at GSA. David, welcome back.
Great. Good to be back, Mark.
It's good to have you as always. It's great to have the real news from the horse's mouth, as it were. Because, the only time the charge card gets in the news is when something untoward happens, and it's usually really bent out of shape. But let's talk a little bit about what's going on. First of all, give us a rundown of the overview of the card package or card charge program, if you would.
Okay, sure. In fiscal year 12, we had $29.3 billion in total program spend. That was across purchase, travel, fleet, and integrated card products, as well as some of our cardless solutions. I know your main interest is in the area of purchase card. So last year, we were at $18.1 billion in total purchase card spend, and that was down about 5% compared to FY11.
The travel card, slash in travel budget started, what, about three-plus years ago now?
Well, what you have kicking in now is OMB has mandated on agencies a 30% cut in travel budgets from an FY10 baseline. So you saw agencies already starting to move in the direction of decreasing travel budgets prior to that, but this is when it really kicks in.
Okay. This is one of the things that most people really don't grasp about your impact in the federal market. How many total cards, fleet, travel, and purchase are out there?
There are more than 3 million cards in the program. The majority of them are travel cards.
Right.
In the purchase card arena, we're talking around 290,000 cards. Purchase cards are interesting because they're primarily in the hands of frontline personnel delivering mission to the country. They're not procurement personnel per se. They may be firefighters, scientists, or clerical workers.
Army Corps has a fair number of cards.
Sure. And, we have 350 customer agencies, depending on how you slice and dice them, mm-hmm. and it'll range from huge organizations like United States Navy, Department of Homeland Security, all the way down to Native American tribal governments use our products.
Right, but my point in bringing up the breadth of the program is $30 billion a year is a lot of money, but impacting potentially 3 million plus federal employees. You've got a lot of ground to cover as far as educating people on card use, and we will get into that aspect. So last year we had 18.1 on the purchase. What was the final total last year on the travel card?
On the travel card for FY12, total travel spend was approximately $9 billion.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but that's down a fair amount over 11, if I recall.
The travel spend was down about 6.3% from FY11. That's correct, Mark.
Okay. So overall, the total card program shrank about 5%?
Well, it shrunk. Total card program was about 5%. That's correct. Okay. If you include everything, we went down about 5%.
And fleet, I'm assuming, is relevant. Explain the fleet card.
Well, the fleet cards are used for government vehicles, fueling, and maintenance. And also the data from the cards assists in monitoring fleet utilization, for example. When a driver pulls up to a pump and goes to refuel a vehicle, that pump is going to prompt them to enter certain information, such as vehicle ID, mileage, things like that, you know, the odometer reading on the vehicle. And so we can track data on that, on the use of that vehicle with the fleet card. Fleet spend between FY11 and FY12 actually went up about 3% because it's tightly correlated to the price of fuel. Now we have fuel going down. So it's really tightly associated with that.
I would imagine so. So where are we year to date 13 on the program?
Okay, the data I have, Mark, is through March, and total spend on the program is down about 7%. When you look at everything. Now, if we were to compare March of last year to March of this year, in just March to March, its travel spend is down about 30%, and purchase was down about 20%. Now, the first two quarters of the fiscal year, because card purchasing is cyclic, are typically the lowest months of the year. So moving into the third and fourth quarter now, we expect agency spend based on mission need to increase. We don't think it's going to be at the same level as it was the year before, however, because of the budget situation, the challenges that we're facing.
Okay. Now, I know that it's kind of spotty, but several years back at the charge card site on gsa.gov, we used to be able to get reports on the products purchased, you know, the top 10 products, if you will. So give me a feel for the, and the website has changed. It's more informational one way, but it's less granular as far as, or I can't find it. That could well be that I just not found the right report.
Well, we post total program spend by agency,
right,
and that's updated on a monthly basis. Mm-hmm. That's when we get the reports from the banks. But to read down, and this is by what we call merchant category code grouping. So it's not per product. And as you know, we're a commercial program, so we rely on commercial data. So the top 10 are miscellaneous and specialty retail stores, dental, laboratory, medical, ophthalmic, hospital equipment and supplies, industrial supplies, stationery, office supplies, printing and writing paper, colleges, university, professional schools, and junior colleges.
Now, is that for education?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
So like continuing professional education types of programs.
Right. Whatever is allowed by law for the agencies in terms of training employees or employees or people in the military who have certain training benefits, that could be reflected in the spend here.
Okay.
We've got, and this is one of the challenges, and I know you live with this every day, of commercial data. It's business services not elsewhere classified. Okay. Next is health practitioners and medical services. Government services is the next, and you'd asked about this one when we were talking before. Computers, computer peripheral equipment, and software is the next category. And so, as you know, I mean, there is a broad swath of businesses covered by these merchant category code descriptions. And when you say something like, well, you know, what's your office supply spend, it can actually show up and, in fact, does show up in multiple MCC categories. So it's a challenge to define that spend, because you could go into a retail store, for example, and buy office supplies, or you could go into an office supply store, and the MCC coding will be different for those transactions based on the type of merchant.
Well, that miscellaneous retail probably includes a lot of the B2B catalogers, and they're going to sell office supplies, medical supplies, laboratory supplies, you name it, tools. You know, they're across the board, so you'll find lab safety and Granger probably lumped in there.
There's a MCC category you'd love, 5964, direct marketing, catalog merchants.
There you go.
Catches just what you described, Mark, a broad range of merchants.
Okay. Now, does that show up in your reports?
we are able to get reports by MCC code.
Okay. Okay. Cool. So we have a variety of things. I want to talk in a little bit of detail about the charge card levels, but let's pick that up after the break. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be back in a minute with David Shea of the Office of Charge Card Management. Back after these messages. Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is David Shea. David is the director of the Office of Charge Card Management at Federal Acquisition Service, GSA. You can find information on the program at gsa.gov/smartpay, and it'll take you to a pretty informationally robust subset of the GSA website that'll give you a ton of information on the charge card program. And it's not a credit card program. I've made this mistake before. It's a charge card.
Right, because we don't extend revolving credit to the agencies. The balance is paid off each cycle, and we have
let's touch on that.
Okay, before I go there, if I could, though, we have a quicker website reference for you. It's smartpay.gsa.gov.
Okay,
we'll get you right there.
Smartpay.gsa.gov.
Yes, sir.
The one of the reasons you're a charge card, not a credit card, is the government gets money back because of their quick payment. Give us kind of a tip of the iceberg there, because that's a really cool stat.
Yeah, it's an interesting program because it pays the agencies back for using it, and it's one of the only payment methods the government has that does that. Last year, agencies earned $306 million in net refunds back for using the charge cards. In that was FY12, and FY11 they earned $298 million back. And what this relates to is how much of their invoice they pay and how quickly they pay it. And so the cards are provided to the agencies at no direct cost. And the bulk of the refunds are generated, as you would expect, by purchase. You know, we'd started to talk about the number of cards. While the majority of the cards of the program are travel cards, the biggest contributor in terms of refunds and the biggest amount of spend occurs, of course, on the purchase cards. So that's where the bulk of the refunds comes from.
Right. But it's cool because, you know, you see the TV commercials, use this card, get, you know, your frequent flyers. You use your government card, your agency gets money.
Right. And one thing that acting administrator Dan Tangerlini has asked us to do is take a look, for example, at GSA spend, you know, sort of use ourselves as a laboratory for best practices and testing ideas. And we are looking at GSA's accounts payable file, looking at what vendors we have and how we're paying them, and is there additional opportunity? Now, you can't use cards everywhere, but there certainly could be more opportunity to use it and potentially earn those refunds that you're talking about, earn more of those refunds.
Yeah.
So we're putting ourselves under the microscope here to see what else we could do.
Well, and actually, we're going to touch on part of that in just a second. Let's talk about how the card can be used. It's generally speaking, it's referred to as a micro-purchase program when it comes to the card spend.
You know, that's a common misconception is a lot of people think that, and I think this relates to the use of the card in many people's personal lives, is they have a set view of how cards work and how they can be used, and that sort of limits the vision and how you can apply them much more broadly in a federal program. Over 4 billion of our annual spend in purchase card is at levels of $10,000 per transaction and above. So it's not just micro purchase. It occurs at the contract levels in some cases. In fact, we believe one of the strong opportunities to expand card use and help agencies earn more in refunds in these challenging budgetary times is to look at contract spend and see where they could use the card for those payments.
So 12% of your total spend is above $10,000.
Right, at least. and we're continuing to
hold on. This is just purchase card.
This is just purchase. So it's actually larger than that.
So we're talking 20%.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
We haven't
touched that stat in previous interviews.
I think when we're talking to agencies about getting more value out of the program, especially as budgets become more constrained. And back on your point about the television commercials for consumer card products, where they say, you know, who wouldn't want more cash or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. It's that when an agency's looking at its portfolio of payments and what payment tools it applies, are there additional opportunities to use that card first for micro purchases? Do you have all, on your point, Mark, do you have all your micro purchases covered? Are you using the card to the maximum extent possibility with those micro purchases first? Second, look at your contract spend, and are there additional opportunities to use the card or one of our cardless solutions to pay contract payments? Would be the next thing. And then we've got a third area where we've got things like a grants funding card that we're interested in piloting with an agency. We're working with a number of agencies now in sort of the pre-pilot planning phases, but you may have seen recently there's a concern about under the current grants process, some issues with account maintenance fees.
Right.
And with our tool, there would be no account maintenance fees because the money is not outside the government. You know, the money is drawn down off the card or cardless product when it's needed. So perfect solution in all cases? No. But another tool in the agency's toolbox, payment toolbox, to meet a need.
Okay, let's go back to the contract payment concept for a moment. Explain a little bit about how that would work, because a lot of the companies out there are probably getting their first credit card payment for something significant, and it's maybe catching them off guard.
Well, in the federal government, when we want to use the card as a payment tool under a contract, we actually have to put that into the contract.
Right.
And so we will speak with the vendor beforehand, and if the vendor is agreeable to including it, we will incorporate terms into the contract. At micro purchase, for example, on GSA supply schedules, they got to accept it. That's required. But above that, it's optional. And certainly in open market contracts that agencies may choose to do, I think as part of the market research for the industry they're in, they can talk with the suppliers about would you accept a card as a payment method? Because, you know, with the card, they're going to get paid in 3 to 4 days.
Right.
There's none of the standard net 30 contract payment terms. So there's a time value of money by getting that money earlier. Payment's guaranteed, right? And this may also be an issue of benefit to small businesses from a cash flow perspective, that they be paid earlier. They're also going to get data. For smaller businesses, you're talking about managing less checks or cash, and there's costs associated with that. So, you know, there are a number of benefits to accepting the card.
There's a lot of trade-offs to be had here. On the contract payment side, when you negotiate that with a company, does that require a level 3 processing?
It'll depend on what the agency's doing and their requirements, but I can tell you, for example, the advice we've gotten from industry in the past, you know, we're always interested in the level 3 data.
Yep.
Right? We want to know where our money's going. We want to be able to do oversight on it. We want to be able to be smarter about our sourcing decisions.
With level 3, you get virtually everything you need to run any report necessary.
Well, and let's talk about flavors of level 3 in just a second. But level 3, for those listeners that don't know, is the line item detail. So when you use your personal charge card in a store, it may come back on the statement as simply saying you went to the Acme company on this date and you spent $150, but it doesn't tell you what you bought.
Yeah.
Mark, what you're talking about with level 3 is that description of actually what was bought. And so that is very important data to us. Very often the vendors, when they agree to provide level 3, their acquirer, the company that processes the transaction for them, will give them a break on the price of processing that transaction because it's more data rich.
Right. Less likelihood of fraud for both sides.
Right. And so, you know, what you will find, particularly like in the in GSA strategic sourcing agreements and what industry is advised is, hey, leverage those contractual arrangements to require the provision of level three. But what we've also learned is you can't stop there. You've got to talk about what that level three should be comprised of. For example, manufacturer part numbers. If you're looking to be able to track what you're paying for something, if you have different retailer stock numbers, it's not possible to track what the actual item is. So you really get into the minutia on this thing. The other thing that's important is tax data. The government generally is tax exempt, particularly with the purchase card. Mm-hmm. Travel card, it's a lot more complex. But we want to be able to track that tax data so that we can be sure that we're complying with applicable tax policies.
Okay. I want to get back to the level three and to the tax issue because that goes back to Mr. Grass, Senator Grassley's bill, and we're going to talk about that. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We will be back after these, and if you haven't caught on, this show is all things smart pay. Back after these. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is David Shea. David runs, he is the director of the Office of Charge Card Management at GSA. David, let's talk a little bit about the top agencies that use the card, please.
Sure, and this is where the rubber meets the road on this program. If it weren't for the people in the agencies that manage the program, it wouldn't be what it is today. When we look at FY12 spend on purchase card only, the top spending agency in purchase card was VA at $8 billion. You had DOD in second place with $6 billion. You had the Department of Justice in third with $747 million. HHS at number four with $507 million. And number five was the Department of Homeland Security at $480 million.
I'm surprised that they were only at $480, but they probably have a lot of other ways to pay for stuff. But, you know, they you know, 20-plus different agencies under their umbrella.
Enormously complex and important agency, and we have a very good relationship with them. And I think we're all exploring new ways to use the card and cardless solutions. So yes, I mean, I think there are growth opportunities. Mm-hmm. I think we've just scratched the surface. I mean, when you look at just federal government total procurement spend in FY12 in excess of $500 billion, mm-hmm. and you had total purchase card spend in the $18 billion range, you can't help but think that there's more opportunity, not only with micro-purchases, but with contract spend, to use a carded product more often.
Right. So, and kind of following on for that, you mentioned this earlier, the government cards are not subject to taxes, but there was a bill up on the Hill. Is it passed? Senator Grassley's bill.
Well, his bill was focused on oversight.
Right.
And it's the Public Law 112-194 got passed last fall. And it's the Charge Card Abuse Prevention Act of 2012.
Right.
And what it basically did was it reinforced and strengthened the requirements for internal controls and fraud prevention on the cards. And right now, we're working very closely with the agencies and OMB on the updated guidance regarding internal controls. Because, I mean, the integrity of the card program is very important. We want to make sure these cards get used for official business.
Right.
On the tax issue, which is a great issue you brought up, you know, it depends on the type of card and the kind of purchase being made. You know, when you look at what we call centrally billed accounts, which our purchase cards, by definition, are centrally billed. Our fleet cards, by definition, are centrally billed. And some travel are centrally billed. Now, what do I mean by centrally billed? What I mean is the government is directly accountable for paying that bill. The government is responsible for that payment. And so where the government is centrally billed, it is tax exempt. The states cannot assess taxes, properly assess taxes on those transactions. On individually billed accounts, however, Those are not the direct financial responsibility of the federal government, and they can be taxed. Not all states choose to tax IBA transactions. It can vary from state to state. There are actually 11 states that don't. And so the only individually billed products we have are travel products. And so we then look at educating our travelers about where they're going to be taxed and where they're not going to be taxed. And we have an initiative called Smart Tax, where we have added a lot of training material on our website. We just added a new training video. We have a map of the United States. If a traveler, before they go somewhere, goes to this site and hovers over the map where they're going, it'll tell them whether or not they're going to be taxed and if they need to have a tax exemption form or not. And they can even get a link to the state controller's office to download that form and fill it out before they go if they need to. Now, where are we going with all this? Well, first, tax compliance is important. Mm-hmm. Second, when, as you indicated, there's a lot of pressure on travel budgets. And so we want to help agencies, every dollar that they have, we want to go to support mission, not to paying taxes that they don't need to pay. And so we want to make sure cardholders and card managers are educated about where they should be paying tax and where they shouldn't be. This also gets back to the point about level two and level three data is, you know, we want to be able to look at the data and see whether we actually got taxed or not. So when merchants are entering data as a result of a transaction, it's important that that tax data be captured accurately. You know, if it's a zero, it's a zero. If it's something different, then it needs to be correctly populated.
Right. Okay. And that brings me, you know, I'm glad you brought up the level three again, because strategic sourcing is going to be expanded over the next 3 years. Five schedules are supposed to be impacted in each of the next 3 years. And part of the requirements, if you're going to go after a selective sourcing BPA, part of that contract is level three processing. Is that still accurate?
That's still accurate. We're interested in the level three data. And in fact, as I mentioned before, we're learning a lot or requiring more in terms of the specificity of that level three data. When you look at the OS2 Office Supply Strategic Sourcing Program that GSA and a number of key agencies put in place, there's been $17.4 million in spend to date, $2.7 million in savings, and small business utilization has been about 80% on that program. When you talk about upcoming strategic sourcing initiatives, right now what GSA is working with the agencies and OMB on is janitorial and sanitation products, mm-hmm. and operations and maintenance and repair type items. Those are the next two out of the chute.
So that would probably be, you know, the 51V.
Yes.
The tool superstore, hardware superstore. I would be surprised if, is it 21 or 23V, the auto superstore, the fleet superstore thing, that's probably going to be in the queue too. Anything that's really commodity-based. And if people are surprised that I'm not getting pissy about this, Dave and I agree, we're going to talk about SSI factually here. There's no opinion. It's a fact of life. Deal with it. But the level three aspect allows the vendors at least to recoup some of what they're ceding on margin to get on the contract. They can make up a little bit of this on level three if they have the right vendor. And we'll touch on that.
What you mean in terms of an acquirer?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
There is an opportunity, we understand, in the industry where you provide, if the merchant provides a more data-rich transaction, the acquirer will often give a break on the processing cost for that
right.
transaction.
Right. So we're going to get into you were part, a victim of probably the travel crunch, because the SmartPay conference got canceled this year because registrations were down, probably at least in part because people couldn't travel to it.
Right. Well, so. You've got a lot of pressure on budgets and,
yeah.
you know, with people having to deal with, not being able to work. a full week, for example, in
right.
some cases.
Yeah.
You know, the issue of conferences and things, I think, is even more in the spotlight. But
yeah.
We don't want to let our customers down, so we have embarked on a virtual conference platform. We'll be holding a virtual conference, training conference for our card managers in November.
Okay. Let's get into that after the break. We're going to take our last break now, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the variety of training that you have online for the various card programs. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is David Shea. David is the director of the Office of Charge Card Management at GSA. You can find them at smartpay.gsa.gov. Yes?
Smartpay.gsa.gov. You got it. You
okay.
got the new address. You're
good.
Right.
Good. God, I got it right that time. I just go to gsa.gov to type in SmartPay in the search box.
Either way, it'll get you there, Mark. So that either way is good.
Yeah. It takes you to the same site, and you get some good information. And part of that good information now, vendors cannot access it, but govies can. And this is the important part. Conference got canceled, but the training doesn't stop.
That's correct.
4 years ago, you ran one of the biggest conferences, virtual conference. So start there and tell me about the training program.
Right. About 4 years ago, we held a conference for government card managers called Beyond Plastics. Because even though we're really well known for our plastic charge card products, purchase cards, travel cards, fleet cards, we also have cardless payment processes that could benefit agencies. And so our objective was to educate the agencies about these other options beyond the plastic charge cards.
Mm-hmm.
And we held it as a virtual conference. And the technology is very interesting. This is beyond a conference call or something like that. The company that furnishes this environment, it's like a
it's a virtual world.
Right, a simulated conference hall. And you have meeting rooms and you have a vendor space, for example, for virtual exhibits. You you can meet with people and network with them. There's capabilities to be able to do that. And we had a combination of recorded training presentations and some live. At the time, it was kind of funny, the capability to do a sort of live presentation. We did a where I had to do I was getting questions by chatting, and I had to answer in writing,
yeah.
by typing. And it's a real challenge to keep the flow of the conversation going when you have to answer by keyboarding, because, you know, you're answering one question and then folks are three or four issues down from there already, and you're trying to keep. And we managed to do that in the session I was in, but it was very well received, and it was a really new thing 4 years ago to do this. And so realizing what's happening with the training budgets and based on the experience that we had 4 years ago, we've done the contracting work to put ourselves in place to hold a much larger virtual event, a very robust virtual event. The platform can handle thousands of attendees, mm-hmm. at one time. The training presentations can be stored online for months. So if someone can't join us for a particular session, they can come back later on and see that session.
So it's a webinar
later.
Style format for that.
It's amazing the technology they have to do this. So we're really looking forward to supporting our customers. Again, the actual sessions itself will be in November. Things will be recorded and stored and available for later dates, and we'll be able to handle a large population because, you know, as you've said to me over the years, you know, the training of the tens of thousands of card managers we have across the program and around the world is very important to the program operating properly.
Yeah.
And we want to make sure that these people get this training. And, of course, every year we've got turnover. So you've got new people that need to be trained, and you've always got new issues. You know, you've brought up taxes, strategic sourcing, many other issues that need to be covered. So we will have hundreds of training classes, and we work with our banks, our contractor banks, Citibank, JP Morgan Chase, and US Bank, along with MasterCard and Visa to provide these training sessions. GSA also teaches training sessions itself on certain categories in this virtual conference that we're planning.
Okay, so how how much more are you going to roll out in a virtual way? I mean, whenever there's changes in the rules of charge card uses, which probably isn't that frequently, do you roll out another webinar or event? I mean, there's I can't get into that part of the GSA website because you need the .gov.mil address. So,
We have a very robust customer engagement process. In fact, I'll do a little bit of bragging here. We do GSA FAS does a customer satisfaction, customer loyalty survey is what mm-hmm. they call it. And last year's survey of the program surveyed, SmartPay was the top rated program, and they're asking managers in the agencies how satisfied they are with the GSA Office of Charge Card Management. So we were very pleased and honored that our customers felt so good about the program. And when you say, well, there aren't that many changes in CART, believe it or not, there are a lot of changes. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Mr. Grassley's bill. Mm-hmm. There was the class action settlement involving Visa, MasterCard, and others that just started to get implemented this past January 25th, I believe it was, in regard to surcharging, where merchants can choose to surcharge in some cases. And then we've also got a similar issue with educational institutions now that can surcharge. We're not seeing much surcharging going on, and I believe we're not going to because of competitive reasons. But in any event, that's something we had to educate cardholders about. We were talking about taxes. We have to educate them about that. We've got upcoming changes to the OMB circular, which is the central policy for governing charge cards. So a lot of churn in terms of what's going on in training cardholders, let alone best practices, AP file review, and looking how we can really manage the program as best as possible.
Cool stuff. When we were talking prior to the show, I asked you to come up with a list of tips for vendors, and this is not your normal bailiwick, but because of your experience here, I think, and I haven't previewed the list, I haven't heard the list. I'm curious.
It's been sealed in a mayonnaise jar on the front step,
yeah,
right?
Just like those Academy Awards. So, share with us, if you will, your advice for vendors when it comes to cards. Card usage.
And what I'd like to do, Mark, is, I mean, I would hesitate to give any business advice on how to run their business. What I'd like to do is couch these as observations that I've had, having been in the business for as long as I have. And I guess the first thing I would say is that for businesses that accept cards or want to accept cards, is to shop around for their acquirer. And the acquirer is the company that allows them to accept charge cards, get those transactions processed, and get paid. And I think a lot of times vendors have established banking or other financial relationships, and they sort of just default into, well, if I'm going to accept cards, I'll go with the same organization. And that might be fine, but I think it always pays to shop around because the rates do vary. And yep. So, you know, you were talking about margin earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a smart thing to do is shop around for the acquirer, shop the rates, make sure you get the best rate that you can.
Right. And the more you process on cards, the more money in processing fees you pay.
Right.
So okay.
The other thing is that if you're interested in providing level 3, I mean, that's obviously something, as we covered, the government's very interested in. I'm sure there are other entities that are interested in level 3. That gets you, in many cases, a break on your processing costs, and it's valuable information. That's why they're willing to give you that break. So,
right.
But providing level 3 data, you've got to have a point of sale system that can handle that, and you've got an inventory management system that's got to support that, and then you've got to think through what kind of data you're actually going to be provided. The third thing I would point out, and this may strike you as kind of strange, but we were talking about the top spend categories earlier in the show, and we were commenting on some of these miscellaneous or not elsewhere classified categories. I think it's important that, you know, if you're going to accept cards and you're getting set up by your acquirer to accept them, you know, the acquirer is the one that establishes your MCC code. Make sure you're in the right MCC code, right? Very important. And I think sometimes that sort of gets lost in the process.
Well, some people don't care.
Right. But it's important in the end.
Yep.
So certainly very important to us as we continue to review and better understand our spend and into the future.
Okay. That it?
Yes, sir.
Those are them. Those are good. Great stuff. David, thank you again for coming in for our annual chat, SmartPay. If you want to make it more frequent, you know, love to have you back whenever it's germane to the program or when there's news to discuss.
Fantastic. Great to be here. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You've been listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio. This is not my day job. I run the Government Market Master Program at Capital College. We run classes on a very regular basis. So if you want to see the full schedule, go to Capital, CAPITOL-college.edu/GMM. And thank you for listening to Amtower Off-Center.
You've been listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Amtower Off-Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.